From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello talks about the Democratic National Convention with Register Senior Editor Matthew Bunsen, who reported from the convention in Philadelphia. Then we'll go to Krakow, Poland, where Register correspondent Philip Mazurczak is attending World Youth Day. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks so much for joining us. Our first guest, Matthew Bunsen, joins us from Philadelphia. Matthew is senior editor for the Register. He talks with Jeanette about the Democratic Convention just concluded.
Matthew, it's great to have you back on Register Radio. It has been an intense 2 weeks politically with the two conventions, the Republican convention in Cleveland, and then the Democrat convention in Philadelphia this past week. Let's talk about the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. What was the atmosphere like?
Well, certainly on the concluding night when Hillary Clinton accepted the nomination of the Democratic Party, you had the sense on the floor that everyone there, and I think everyone around the country, regardless of what you think of her policies and positions on things, that this was a genuinely historic moment in the sense mm-hmm. of the first nomination by one of America's major political parties in bringing to its leadership a woman.
Right.
And we saw the nomination of Barack Obama in 2008 as the first African-American. So this is another milestone, I think, in American social progress. And regardless of where you come politically, this is something to be celebrated.
Yeah, you know, I saw one headline that was talking about her daughter, Chelsea, and how unique of a person in history she is, having two parents who one was president and one is vying for to be president. So she is in a very unique role. And of course, she spoke Thursday in a very personal way about her mother. And during Hillary Clinton's nomination speech, her acceptance speech, what were some of the highlights? And really, did she succeed in creating more unity within the party? It was a very intense week with Senator Sanders' followers and his fans. So what did her speech do? Did it succeed?
Yeah, that's the question. We'll have a better idea of its success probably over the next week or so when we see polling. Everyone customarily gets a post-convention bounce. Hillary Clinton may very well. If she does it, then it's a question of how high the bounce goes.
Mm-hmm.
But her speech last Thursday really was focused on a couple of things. First, she had to reintroduce herself to an American electorate that has known her for a very long time and of course, is aware of the extensive political and even personal baggage that she brings
right.
to this White House run. Then there's the task of trying to disqualify, in a way to delegitimize Donald Trump as an opponent, knowing full well that he had a pretty significant bump himself coming out of the Republican convention in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you point out so rightly, there's the effort to bring a party together that has been pretty fractured.
Right.
That last task, I'm not entirely sure if she's accomplished based on the heckling that went on during her speech. But also the apparent movement of a lot of Sanders people either not to vote or even into more radical parties such as the Green Party
right.
Or simply to write in Bernie Sanders on their own. So this is a movement rather than simply a subset of the Democratic Party. And movements, as you know from history, can be very difficult to control.
Right. Right. Well, they were definitely difficult to control this week. Sanders several times tried to reach out to his constituency there, the delegates who were there for him, to ask them to pipe down, if you will, and that just wasn't happening. So certainly an interesting thing to watch, and we'll have to see how it continues forward. But, you know, there's one element that I think is very worth talking about on Register Radio, and that is, what did the two conventions say about the issue of faith?
Yeah, this is one of those peculiar juxtapositions in which, for the first time, certainly in my memory, the Republican convention focused very little on faith. Beyond Donald Trump's open plea to evangelicals, He made no reference at all, for example, to Catholics, whereas the Republican convention was not focused on faith. The Democratic convention spoke quite openly about faith. In fact, the vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine, is a pro-abortion Catholic who nevertheless talked a lot about his own faith journey. So it was a curious change of atmosphere. The question, though, is when we get deeper into the platform, how is that faith lived and how is it going to be applied? And one of the really imponderables right now is how both parties are going to reach out to faith voters, because regardless of the rise of the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S's, as a part of the voting blocks, faith voters still play a significant role in American political life because faith plays such a significant role in American life.
Of course. And you talk about the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, and those are people who have are no longer practicing a faith. They don't really identify with a particular faith practice. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Matthew Bunsen, who has been covering the conventions, the Republican convention, last week, 2 weeks ago, and the Democrat convention just this past week from the ground. And we are talking about those two conventions now. And Matthew, I did want to get into a deeper discussion of the two platforms. You've been blogging about the conventions at ncregister.com. You've written pretty extensively about the platforms. And I think one question to ask is, especially on the issue of abortion, is how far apart these parties are on that issue. It's not really something I need to ask because it's pretty obvious when people just look at the party platforms. But let's dissect it a little bit.
Yeah, to say that the two platforms are radically opposed to each other is something of a severe understatement, especially in 2016. The basic reality is that the Republican platform is the most conservative, most pro-life of any, probably in the history of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. They stress the importance of life. They want to try to defend life. And you can see the victory in this platform of almost all of the key points desired by the pro-life community. The Democratic platform.
Let me just jump in for a second there, because I think that the Republicans had to do that in this written form, and also with the choice of vice president candidate, who is Mike Pence, and who's a very strong pro-life figure, and his record shows that. But they almost had to do that because Trump does not have that record. It makes sense for them to have written that in. But let's turn again, as you were, to the Democrat platform.
Yeah, and in fact, there's still a great deal of suspicion about Donald Trump.
Right.
So in a way, this Republican platform is serving as the guide for him as a statement of the principles he's supposed to follow, rather than as an expression of his own ideals and principles that he wants to see applied.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
And for the Democrats, though, this is a complete triumph, I think, of the radical wing of the party, especially with regard to life. What this platform calls for is the repeal of both the Hyde Amendment and the Helms Amendment that restrict the use of taxpayer funds to fund abortions on the domestic front in the case of the Hyde Amendment, and the international front in the case of the Helms Amendment. Abortion, or reproductive health rights, as they call it as a euphemism, is referenced 19 times in the 55 pages. And it's very clear, too, that they see abortion as going to be a linchpin for American diplomatic initiatives, and certainly will be tied very closely to the use of aid. So this is an agenda the likes of which even the Democratic Party has not seen before. And perhaps the two most telling little word choices, where the platform used to say that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, the word rare is now gone completely. And right. If you look throughout the entire document, you will not find the word conscience. So it raises some significant questions regarding the approach of a Clinton administration, a prospective Clinton administration, in the area of religious liberty.
Right. That, and that's, it's very concerning for those of us who have been watching these issues with religious liberty, as EWTN has, because of our own problems in that regard. So it is a serious thing to see the party platform shift in such a way. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Senator Kaine. Tim Kaine was chosen as Hillary Clinton's running mate. He is Catholic. He was born a Catholic, and he still attends church. And he's been called a Pope Francis Catholic. Yeah. And I think we really need to give some time to that title and what is meant by it.
Yeah, the title itself has been appearing of late for some brands of Catholic politicians. It was used especially in a profile of Senator Kaine over the weekend, this last weekend, by the Washington Post. And it implies, incorrectly as it is, that somehow if you are a Pope Francis Catholic, you can pick and choose which of the church's teachings you want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Based on, again, another misinterpretation and misapplication of Pope Francis's line, "Who am I to judge?" In fact, if you take a look at what Pope Francis has had to say on all of the key issues that are usually used to justify being called a Pope Francis Catholic, he's incredibly clear in the areas of abortion, on gender ideology. So to follow the call of Pope Francis is to be faithful to the teachings of the church, but then to bring those out into the world. And Senator Kaine, unfortunately, is a pro-abortion Catholic who also disagrees with the church on a number of other issues, including same-sex marriage and the ordination of women. So mm-hmm. this is a candidate that we need to continue studying very closely as we help Catholics discern and form their consciences as they prepare to vote in exactly the same way that we have to about all of the candidates involved in any election.
That's right, and realizing that no political party gets it right on all of the issues that that we would look at as Catholics in how the human person is treated, and so we have to understand the issues and then look at these parties and really understand what is most important. And of course, we look at the life issue. If you don't have life, then the other issues don't matter. It because you need to be born in order to be able to migrate or to have a decent wage and or to marry even. So it's a really important important issue for Catholics that we encourage our readers to follow with great intensity. We do want to point them to your blogs at ncregister.com, especially day three when you did write about Senator Kaine, days three of the DNC. Our readers can find that at ncregister.com. Matthew, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you.
When we return, we'll go to Poland and get a report from World Youth Day 2016. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Philip Mazurczak, was born in Poland but grew up in the United States. He's a correspondent for the National Catholic Register, and his work has also appeared in Catholic World Report, The Catholic Thing, First Things, and others. He reports this week from World Youth Day in Krakow, Poland.
Philip, it's great to have you on Register Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. We're talking to you from Poland, which is really exciting. And this is a really exciting moment for you because you were born in Poland, you were raised in the United States, you studied in Poland, and now you're back there with a million people from around the world. So what an exciting opportunity for you. In fact, I wanted to start with this very question about Poland. What is the significance of this papal visit for Poland, and how have the Polish people and society accepted this visit by Pope Francis and all of these young people from around the world?
I think that George Weigel has said before that this World Youth Day is really where it's really its homecoming, because World Youth Day wasn't even born really in Rome in 1984, but it was born here in Krakow, where John Paul II was doing a lot of, I'd say, revolutionary in a certain way work with young adults, with young people, that really paved the way for World Youth Day. So this is kind of, I think Pope Francis's tribute to John Paul II and his city. Also, this year marks the 1,050th anniversary of Christianity in Poland. Pope Paul VI was really the first pope to travel outside of Italy. He traveled the United States to Fatima, India, other places. And he wanted to visit Poland in 1966 as part of these ceremonies on the millennium of Christianity in Poland. However, he was not able to, because the communists didn't let him. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of Pope Francis' symbolic way of making up that that event that Paul was not allowed to do. As far as the Polish reactions, I'd say they were overall they've been overall positive. And some of the left-wing secularist press, there's been articles in the vein of the Polish right-wingers don't like Pope Francis, etc. Mm-hmm. They disagree with him on migrants and global warming. But the truth is, these are sensationalist headlines, and I'd say that the view of Francis has been overwhelmingly positive. I think that naturally no pope will ever be as popular as John Paul II in Poland. Well, unless there's maybe another Polish pope, but I don't think that'll happen anytime soon, at least. But in general, Francis has been very popular here. Francis did something very Polish. When John Paul II was pope and he came to Krakow, he'd make impromptu appearances in the window of the Archbishop's Palace at night and have kind of informal conversation with the faithful. Well, Francis did that yesterday and the day before, and I think he struck a chord with the Polish people. I think he's been well received.
That's great. Now, you have been there for this entire week, and
yes.
Tell me what it's like with the young people. What is the atmosphere like for those who are visiting from around the world?
Well, personally, this is my first World Youth Day. I've never been to World Youth Day before, so perhaps some of these things are the same thing that happened at other editions of the event. But I'd say that really I've never been in any place like this before. And I'm not talking about Krakow itself. I've been to the city many times. I've lived there. I know it well. But just the sort of atmosphere where Christianity, even Christendom, is in a way present on the streets. There are people singing religious songs on the streets. There's all the museums have exhibits devoted to Catholicism, to Christianity. Like the National Museum, for example, is hosting an exhibit of the most beautiful depictions of the Madonna in Renaissance mm-hmm. painting. There's banners showing John Paul II and St. Faustina everywhere. This is really Christianity has conquered the streets. And these young people, I think, have really won the hearts of Poles. In the United States, we kind of have the stereotype about how New Yorkers aren't very friendly or kind of gruff. But I'd say the same thing goes with Polish people every day. People aren't necessarily that friendly, but I'd say they're much, much more so now. And I think it's as a result of these pilgrims. I think that the local population has been greatly impressed with these young people on fire with their faith, in love with their faith. And I think this is a good thing that's inspiring to the population.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, who is co-hosting this show with me, and we are talking to Philip Mazurczyk, who is in Poland right now for World Youth Day. And Matthew, I know that you had some questions you were burning to ask Philip.
Yeah, well, Philip, I'd love to talk to you about the fact that there are a great many European pilgrims in Krakow, and it's possible to see this as an optimistic sign for the church in Europe, and evidence that, contrary to what a lot of people believe, the church is not dead there. Talk about your experience with that.
I strongly agree with that. There's also a lot of Latin Americans. There's a ton of Brazilians everywhere, but by far Europeans are the most numerous group of pilgrims. I'm also writing some articles for the Catholic World Report about the different groups of pilgrims, and I've talked to some French pilgrims. Actually, of all the groups of pilgrims who have registered for World Youth Day this year, after Polish and Italian pilgrims, the French pilgrims are the third largest group. And you know, this is kind of different from what many of us think of when we think of the church in France. I talked to some of these people, and they tell me that, yeah, it's difficult to be a Catholic in France. But when I ask them if they think that the situation will be better tomorrow, they don't hesitate when they say that it will be. Cardinal Lustiger, who's the late Archbishop of Paris, said that if the problem came from France with regards to sort of heretical bishops and theologians, the solution will also come from France. And he, of course, is referring to all these different great charismatic revival movements in France, like Chemin Neuf and L'Arche and all these other wonderful movements. I'd say that, yeah, definitely this shows us that the church in Europe is not dead. It faces challenges, but this is nothing new. You know, in the 16th century, during the Protestant Reformation, the church also faced great challenges. So I don't think the church in Europe is going to die out, and I hope that Pope Francis, who in my opinion hasn't done enough to travel to different European countries, encourage the people there to live their faith, that maybe if he sees these huge crowds of young people, largely European, celebrating their faith, maybe he will think that Europe is still worth a shot.
You know, Philip, you've been writing for the Register. I know you've been writing for other papers as well. It's so great to get your perspective out on this wonderful event. One of the articles you wrote for the Register, it was on divine mercy. And of course, so many of us know Poland because of St. Faustina, and of course, because of St. Pope John Paul II. But let's talk about, in these closing minutes of our show, about divine mercy and how that's been present at this World Youth Day.
Well, I think it would be fair, as I wrote in my article, to say that St. Faustina is kind of like the co-star of this edition of World Youth Day. There's a lot of images of her, right before World Youth Day officially started, there were the days in the diocese during which 130,000 pilgrims from all around the world went to all the Polish dioceses, both the urban ones and the more provincial ones. And in a lot of these dioceses, there were events related to St. Faustina. For example, in Łódź, L-O-D-Z, which is the third largest city in Poland, there was a trail marking St. Faustina's walk from the Venezia Park to the Archdiocesan Cathedral, and there were stations during which there were meditations on her diary. And talking to pilgrims, it's clear that St. Faustina is someone who's important to a lot of them. These are pilgrims from all over the world, from Europe, from Asia, from Latin America, from the United States. So I'd say that definitely she's become someone who's popular here. And I think based on my experience in the United States, I think she's become globally popular among Catholics. In fact, I would maybe even hesitantly, but still say that maybe even devotion to Divine Mercy chaplet is even more stronger and more popular among devoted American Catholics, practicing ones, not necessarily the ones who go to church twice a year, but the more devout ones, than maybe even among Polish ones.
Wow.
So I think that this is an international affair. I know that Divine Mercy Chaplet's popular in the Philippines, in Mexico. So I think it's really gone global.
Yeah, what a wonderful thing to have gone global. You know, Philip, it's so good to have you on the show and to hear your perspective. It's a good perspective and a unique one. I know that you've shared with me that you've seen many of these pilgrims who are too young to really even remember John Paul as Pope, but they have still been very inspired by him, by his sanctity, and now they're living and walking where he lived. And what a beautiful experience that is. So at ncregister.com, our listeners can follow Philip's work and read about all of the wonderful experiences that are happening at World Youth Day.
Thank you so much. God bless you all.
All right, Philip. We'll talk to you soon.
Sure. Goodbye.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com or ewtnradio.net. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at The Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.